At that time, Mary Info said, did Johnny slip along? As you have explained, you have been slipping along from church to church. So what am I to put down here on the paperwork as to what religion you belong to? Johnny Slipalong says, oh, don't you know? I'm a pre-vat-trad cat. Mary Info says, you're a what? I've never heard of that religion. I'm a pre-vat-trad cat. And Mary Info says, what does that mean? I've never heard of that, as I said. That means I'm a pre-Vatican II traditionalist Catholic. I've kind of quit slipping back into the Lutheran and the Episcopalian and the Methodist and the Baptist religions, and seldom do I go back to the No Church, although it's the same as the Ten Group as far as the Pope and all those things are concerned. But mostly I'm just a pre-Vat-Drad cat because I believe the things of pre-Vatican II, as all these other people do, except they don't believe some of the important truths, such as having me or anyone else take the abjuration of bearing the profession of faith, for the most part. It's pretty easy for me and millions of others just to slip along from one of these groups to the other. Makes things quite convenient. If you don't like this padre over here, slip over to the padre next door and across the street and across the town. They all give you the pre-Vatican II devotions to some extent or another. Some of these padres are pretty hard-working trying to get unity among them. Others don't work too hard at getting unity among them. But one thing's for certain, there is no unity among the pre-Vat-Dradcat religions. Each is on his own. Each changes around. It's a funny thing, my friend. But it's a very unfunny ha-ha. People are not going to laugh about it on General Judgment Day. Satan and his henchmen down below must be having a lot of ha-has, seeing people like me just slip along from church to church. And after all, I'm still a protesting Protestant because I've never been received into the church according to the rubrics, the abjuration, the profession of faith required in the true Catholic Church. And there are multitudes just like me. So the old devil must be saying, ha-ha, I still own all those people, whether they are protesting Protestants or pre-Vat-Dradcat or the N.O. theory or the no pope, half pope, live pope, dead pope. Ha, 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 they're all coming to me. But that's going to be a very unfunny ha, ha, come General Judgment Day. And with that, Mary Info said, well, that's good, Johnny. Slip along. Now, you only have 101 papers to sign here to be sure we get all the insurance, to be able to collect all this money that we need to pay for these expensive doctors and expensive hotels they call the hospitals where you spend all night. If you get to sleep, they'll wake you up to give you your sleeping pills. And by the way, Johnny, who is your doctor? Who do you want to tend to your bleeding wound before you sit here and die on us? Johnny Slipalong says, I don't have any doctor. I'll take whoever's on call tonight. So Mary Info tells Johnny Slipalong, well, Dr. Butcher Slaughterall is on duty. He's the number one butcher doctor in this state. Dr. Butcher Slaughterall butchers all the babies. They were conceived when the birth control means failed. But things have been kind of slow around here this afternoon. And I think that Dr. Butcher Slaughterall slipped on over to play a few rounds of golf. I'm quite certain that's where he went because when he left here he was wearing two pairs of pants. I've always asked him before, why do you wear two pairs of pants when you go golfing? And Dr. Butcher Slaughterall told me, he wears two pairs of pants to the golf course just in case he makes a hole in one. So be patient, Johnny, and I'll try and call him on his pager, see if he can come back and doctor your wound. And while we wait for Dr. Butcher Slaughterall to phone back, why don't you tell me more about this pre-Vat-Dradcat religious beliefs? I may want to join them myself. Sure, Mary. I'll give you some info. There is very interesting, important, and informative information in the August, September, and in the October, November 1985 issues of The Reign of Mary, which is a publication put out by the CMRI Church, the Community of Mary Immaculate Queen of the Universe in Spokane, Washington. Both issues of this Reign of Mary state the following. There are many today who state that Vatican II is merely a pastoral council, that nothing doctrinal was to be defined. They say this in order to justify its heresies by saying that since it was only pastoral, it could contain error. In short, it could be accepted or rejected. These same self-styled modernist theologians are quick to quote the sayings of John the 23rd, that this council was to meet to discuss nothing doctrinal, and thus they say it is not infallible. On the contrary, the Second Vatican Council did meet during the years 1962 to 1965 to discuss and pervert doctrine. Witness the dogmatic decree of the doctrine of the faith. It is important to note that all the decrees of Vatican II were closed by this or a similar epilogue. Quote, each and every one of the things set forth in this decree has won the consent of the fathers. We, too, join with the venerable fathers in approving, decreeing, and establishing these things. Unquote. There follows the signatures of Paul VI and the fathers of the council. Now these statements, as we have explained in past issues, constitute an exercise of the teaching magisterium of the Church. But there is obvious heresy contained in these decrees. Therefore, those who put their signature to these decrees have made themselves culpable for the heresies they contain. They are public heretics and incur penalties as provided for in church law for all who are guilty of public heresy. Thus, we must reject Vatican II as a false council and regard all those who promote and encourage it as public heretics outside the Catholic Church founded by Jesus Christ. And that's the end of the quote from this Reign of Mary issues. The Mary info, for your information, I'm going to sum that up for you. First, they've just stated the decrees of Vatican II contain obvious heresy. Secondly, everyone who signed any of these heretical decrees made himself culpable of public heresy. Thirdly, those who signed did incur penalties and are guilty of public heresy. And fourth, we must regard all who promote and encourage it as public heretics outside the Catholic Church founded by Jesus Christ. The Mary info, there's something that Father Louis Marie Kerfoot, who probably wrote this article, did not seem to know at the time he wrote it. Namely, that Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre and Archbishop Duke signed the most heretical decrees of Vatican II. The decrees on ecumenism and religious liberty. To prove this, all you need to do is look in the book Acta Synodalia Sacra Sancti Concilii Ecumenici Vaticani II. There will list the documents of Vatican II and shows which bishop signed each document. Look in Volume 3, Parts 8, for those who signed the decree on ecumenism. On pages 863 and page 867, you'll find the signatures of Marcellus Lefebvre and Petrus Martinez Nundentuk. In Volume 4, Parts 7, are the names who signed the decrees on religious liberty. On pages 809 and 812 are the same signatures of Archbishop Marcellus Lefebvre and Archbishop Duke. Copies of the books are available through most libraries. Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington has them. The evidence proves Archbishop Duke and Archbishop Lefebvre signed the most heretical decrees of the Council. If Pope Paul VI, as he is known to the world, anti-Pope Paul VI, Martini, and the Novus Ordo bishops lost their office, authority, and jurisdiction, they were automatically excommunicated and officially became non-Catholics for signing these heretical decrees, according to these teachings of CMRI Church. Do you agree that Archbishop Lefebvre and Duke received the same penalties? Will these pre-vat, trad-cat, Roman-collar politicians, the leaders of these sects in the traditionalist movement, be so manipulative, deceptive, and deceitful as to find some insubstantial, flimsy, and implausible excuse for Archbishops Duke and Lefebvre, where they place the guilt on Paul VI, John Paul II, John Paul I, and the rest of them? Remember, these articles for the Reign of Mary were written in 1985 when Father Louis Marie Kerfoot, who probably and quite certainly wrote these articles, was asked about this in September of 1999. He simply said, "I don't believe that anymore. I wouldn't write that." When he wrote this in 1985, he probably did not realize that Duke had signed these heretical decrees and come under the penalties they outlined in these articles. Now that they know more facts, they do 180-degree flip-flop spiritual gymnastic and change their whole view. It's much the same way that Anthony Shakata does the same kind of spiritual gymnastic flip-flops. He writes this article about two bishops in every garage, where he explains all about the Duke line bishops and how they are not valid, or at least not listed, and all the other many problems they have multiply, and that's where there will soon be two bishops in every garage, and there are quite a few of them in the world today. The one, his friend Daniel Dolan, was getting connected where he could possibly become a bishop through the same Duke line via Mark Peperonis, who received his consecration from Cremona, who received his directly from Duke. Then Anthony Shakata does his flip-flop, completely reverses everything, and sings the praises of the Duke line succession of ordinations and consecrations. Sacred Heart Hospital, Information Desk.
Yes, this is Dr. Butcher Slaughterall returning your phone call pager.
Yes, Doctor. We have a patient here in the emergency who is bleeding from a big gash on his head. He has most of the papers signed. About five more will cover the papers where the doctors are released from all responsibility in case the patient does not survive the treatment. We just want to know when you're coming back and what to do with the patient in the meantime.
Well, Mary, the priest from the Immaculate Conception Church in Post Falls, Idaho, and Father Louis Marie Kerfoot from Mount St. Michael's, and some of the professors from Gonzaga University, and the priest from the Chancellery Office in Spokane, we're all enjoying a nice round of golf with me here today. We have all agreed that we're going to leave the clubhouse soon and go out and play at least 9 more rounds of golf. Some of these priests have been chiding me out here on the golf course today that they don't like my profession of being the butcher boy up there at Sacred Heart Hospital to take care of all the abortions. So they reminded me that I should give better instructions on the natural family planning that we give there at Sacred Heart Hospital, so that their parishioners will not have to go on to have an abortion. They won't have so many failures in the natural family planning program. Since I have a class up there at 7:00 tonight, I'll be back in time to take care of this patient you have there bleeding to death. In the meantime, I need to play these rounds of golf. Why don't you just have him slip on down the hallway to my office room, get the nurse's aide to strap him down good in my execution chair, and then get an extra strong tourniquet around his neck and cinch it down super tight. When I come back in several hours, I'll see if there's anything he needs to have taken care of after that. I don't expect to see him bleeding much if the nurse's aides do a good job and cinch that tourniquet tight enough and keep it on there for several hours.
Okay, Dr. Slaughter, I'll see if the nurse's aides can execute your orders. Thank you for calling back.
Thank you, Mary, and tell your patient there to have no fear. The remedies I prescribe for my patients very seldom or never fail. I'll see you all when I get back after a few more rounds of golf. Thank you. And then Johnny slipped along. Said to Mary Info, I heard what the doctor said, and that reminded me of what Tommy Tomahawk told me a while back. His grandmother said the Indians have a good remedy when you get a big cut. Just put some cayenne pepper on it. It'll stop the bleeding very soon and leave no scar tissue. I just remembered that, and I'm going to slip along real quick-like down to the closest health food store and try this Indian remedy. Have the nurse's aides apply Dr. Butcher Slaughterall's prescription to himself when he gets back. The whole world would be better off if all the doctors who practice as him had his own medicine applied to them. Adios. Well, folks, if you want to know whether Johnny Slipalong slipped over to the health food store in time before he bled to death, maybe the crazy commentator from KRAZY radio station will have a special report on the evening news later on. Want you to tune in if you want to know what happened to Johnny Slipalong. On the way to the health food store, I heard Johnny Slipalong tell Tommy Tomahawk that he hoped he could still get well enough to slip on down to Sacramento, California. Slip in and see his old friend, Father Rizzo, who used to be the Society of St. Pius X, and then Father himself slipped over into the Fraternity of St. Peter. It's all part of the pre-Dradcat religion, you know, so Johnny Slipalong will be right at home. After he goes on the one-on-one priest, he'll slip over to the Fraternity of St. Peter, and then St. Pius X, then St. Pius V, and the CMRI, and who knows where. Slip along, folks. Or like that, you know. With that being said, I'm going to let this slip-along story about Johnny Slip-along come to a close and tell you about Pam the City Gal. Many moons ago, when I was a younger chap, just a year or two out of high school, I was located on this earth at the place called Spokane, Washington. There, my older brother and I were going to a trade school while my sister was working as a nurse's aide at Sacred Heart Hospital. Three of us lived together in an apartment. Once, my sister invited one of her friends, Pam, over for supper. Spokane is not a super big city, but it seems Pam had never been on a farm or thought about things we Henrys thought everyone knew. Somehow, during the meal, the conversation revealed some shocking facts. I think one of us Henrys must have asked in a joking way to please pass the moo-moo juice. Pam said, What? What is moo-moo juice? My sister said, That is what you call milk. Pam said, Why is milk called moo-moo juice? One of the Henrys asked her, Where do you think milk comes from?
From the grocery store, was Pam's reply.
Where does the store get it from? Was the next question. Pam honestly did not know. She never seemed to think that the milk she drank came from any place except Safeway, IGA, or the convenience store at the corner. One of the Henrys then asked, Do you know what cackleberries are?
Never heard of them, was Pam's reply.
Again, Pam did not stop to think that the eggs come to the store from the farm. To Pam, the eggs, like the milk, originated in the store. Then she was asked, What are tube steaks? Pam could not even guess.
Having told her that is another name for hot dogs, it was asked, "Do you know what they put in hot dogs and what the outer skin is made of?" Pam did not know, but she just about showed us how strong her stomach was by how far she could throw up her supper when one of us told her hot dogs have horse meat in them. As indicated above, the Henrys were surprised to find out that this city gal never stopped to think about the fact that food in the grocery store was brought to the store from someplace else. These facts just related actually happened in my life, but that reminds me of another story. The story is told about two thrifty city dudes named Stanley Skyscraper and Oliver Office Man, who decided one day during their common coffee break that they would be two dandy cowboys. Therefore, Skyscraper, an office man, found a parcel of land in the country, which they purchased for a ranch. Being thrifty fellows, they did not spend much, therefore they called it the Oleo Ranch, since it was one of the cheaper spreads. The first thing these two city dudes did was get their hitching post made, because they had read in a Western book once that cowboys tie their horses to a hitching post. Next in order for Stanley Skyscraper and Oliver Office Man was to buy their horses. Stanley picked out a steed to his liking first, and taking it to the Oleo Ranch, tied it to the left side of the hitching post. Oliver, making the choice of his mount, took it to the ranch and tied his mount to the right side of the hitching post. But guess what? When these two city dudes saw their horses side by side, they could not tell them apart. Stanley said to Oliver, "I bought my horse first, and it has long mane and a long tail. Why did you buy a horse with long mane and a long tail? Now we cannot tell them apart." Oliver replied, "I did not know what make of horse you would buy, and I liked my beautiful horse with its long mane and tail. Therefore I bought it." Mr. Skyscraper replied, "That is just the way you city slickers are. Did you not ever read in the books that cars are known by what make they are, but horses are known by what breed they are?" Then Oliver received the inspiration to measure the horses to see which horse was tallest. Good idea, but both horses were the same height. Not knowing how to tell their horses apart, Stanley and Oliver each returned to the city, pondering, reflecting, considering how to solve their problem. Stanley received a brilliant idea. He returned at once to cut the long mane on his steed. Sounds good, does it not? It might have been good, except Oliver Office Man had the same splendid idea and trimmed the mane on his mount the same night. The next day, Oliver received a grand, magnificent, and outstanding idea. He went back to his horse to trim its tail. Too bad that Stanley thought of doing the same thing that very night. But God does not abandon, desert, and remove his help from Stanley and Oliver altogether. Mr. Office Man said to Mr. Skyscraper, "I heard a saying once, never look a gift horse in the mouth. What do you think that means?" Stanley replied, "I do not know. But let us go ask Roy Rogers, the man from whom we bought our horses." Roy Rogers explained to them that they could tell the age of a horse by looking at its teeth. Roy told them how a horse will lose its front baby teeth at 3 and receive its bridle teeth at 5. And furthermore, that a stallion will keep his bridle teeth, but a mare will lose hers again at 11. An older horse will lose its cups, and a real old horse usually has broken teeth. Then Roy Rogers solved the problem for Stanley and Oliver. He told them, "For an example of proof of what I said, go look in the mouths of the horses I sold you. Stanley will find that the black stallion I sold him is just 5 years old, while Oliver's white mare is 15. I realize that now, dear friend, you're probably saying, "Patrick,
Why did you waste my time telling me such a crazy story? Even thrifty, dandy cowboys, city dudes though they be, can tell the difference between black and white, day and night, young and old, male and female. You are correct, if that is all you see in the story. However, if you apply yourself to trying to learn something spiritual from this story, you may very well find that not only the city dudes, but also most people are in the same way, just like Stanley Skyscraper and Oliver Office Man. Think about some facts. How many people, it seems, do not understand, acknowledge, and accept that there is about as much difference between the true church that Jesus Christ founded and the false churches as there is between day and night? The Novus Ordo Church still tries to tell us that nothing has changed. This new religion, with its different mass, different sacraments, different liturgy, different catechisms, different canon laws, different doctrines, different dogmas, and different beliefs, is really still the same true Catholic Church. The true Church reminds us of the day, that is, light, life, and truth. The Novus Ordo Church and all other false churches remind us of the night, that is, darkness, death, and chaos. If people can tell the difference between day and night, black and white, male and female, young and old, then why can they not see there is a difference between the teachings of the true Catholic Church and all other churches? Is not the Catholic Church at least 3 times older than all Protestant churches, just as Oliver's mare was 3 times older than Stanley's stallion? The Catholic Church teaches that God created them male and female. And Pope Leo XIII, as one pope among many, explains why God did this and why men have their role in creation and women have their role to play in the divine plan of Almighty God. The women's liberation movement is so opposed, against, and in conflict with the teachings of Scripture, the popes, the fathers of the Church in this matter. It makes me wonder if the majority of people in the world today really can tell the difference between male and female. Oh yes, as far as the sex organs are concerned, they do better than Stanley Skyscraper and Oliver Office Man. But how do they score when put to the test of being in conformity with the mind of the true Church on these matters? Did you know that now about every major church denomination has women priestesses and bishopses? It will not surprise me, and I will not be astonished or amazed, to find out that very soon the Novus Ordo Church will have its women priestesses and bishopses. St. Thomas Aquinas explains the teachings of the Church on most all moral questions. St. Thomas explains very well why the unnatural sins of the gays, homosexuals, and lesbians are the worst kinds of sins against the sixth commandment. Yes, if you will study what the Church teaches, you will understand why. For it is as plain as day and night, black and white, male and female. But that is the root problem for the homosexuals and lesbians. They do not even live by the natural laws of male and female. Have you never read or heard about the great number of people who the world holds in esteem that tell us there is nothing wrong with the life, morals, and ethical standards of the gays, homosexuals, and lesbians? Yes, even the Novus Ordo Roman collared, mitre wears, crozier bears approve of the spiritual life of these who do not accept the difference between male and female. Again, to consider the great number of people today who are all for taking the sexes out of the Scriptures. That is right. They hate it when God is referred to as a male. No more do their falsely interpreted Bibles refer to man and woman, but just people. God is just an it now. They do not like it at all when the Scriptures tell us God made woman subject to man,
women, and liberation. Liberated from what?
From the truth.
For God is right, and God is truth. And right is right, even if nobody is right, while wrong is wrong, even if everybody is wrong. Truth is true, even if nobody believe it. Do people really know the difference, why God created the male and female?
Some men, women, and children might have smiled or chuckled or laughed when they heard the first part of this story about Pam and the city gal and Stanley Skyscraper and Oliver Office Man. But those who preach for women's liberation, the taking of sexes out of the scriptures, and the gays, homosexuals, and lesbians do not laugh when they go on to hear how I applied these stories to their way of life. They may not like what has been said, but in humility, charity, and childlikeness, please allow me to ask them, or you, if you happen to be one or more of the above categories, what pope, council, or father of the church do you quote that will justify your position? Dear friends, is it obvious, easily perceived, and very apparent that a schismatic church cannot be the true Catholic Church? Is it as plain as the fact that there is a difference between black and white, that the official head, leader, and chief pastor of a schismatic church cannot at the same time be the supreme pastor, successor of St. Peter, and vicar of Jesus Christ? Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre, in one of his public official statements, said that the Novus Ordo Church is a schismatic church. Did Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre tell a public lie when he made this statement? Or did Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre state the truth? The Archbishop told the truth, or else he told a lie. If his statement is true, then why did he, until his death, continue to say that the official heads of this Novus Ordo schismatic church were also the true vicars of Jesus Christ? All false churches are in schism and heresy. If Archbishop Lefebvre lied, and the Novus Ordo church is really not in schism and heresy, then it must be the true church. If the Novus Ordo church is the true church, and John Paul II is the true successor of St. Peter, then Archbishop Lefebvre and the Society of St. Pius X are in schism, for they do not accept the authority of John Paul II. If the Novus Ordo Church is the true church that Jesus Christ founded, then there is no justifiable reason for the Society of St. Pius X or any other traditionalist group whatsoever to exist. Do you believe that the Novus Ordo Church is the true church? If you answer yes, and if it really is the true church, then the Novus Ordo Church must of necessity teach, preach, and contain each and every Catholic tradition, dogma, and truth. Dogma does not change. Truth does not change. And the teachings of the church that Jesus Christ founded do not change. Will you bishops, priests, and laity of the Society of St. Pius X please explain to those who still have the true faith how you justify your position without an insolvable contradiction? I have asked members of the Society of St. Pius X to attend their church regularly, send their children to their school, and profess that they belong to the true church the following question. Would you attend the Mass offered by John Paul II if you were right in that church on a Sunday and there was no other Mass you could attend? No, was the reply. Why not? Because it would be a danger to our faith. My dear friends, is there any way that you can explain why a true Pope, who is therefore the true visible head of the true church, is offering a true valid Mass, should or could be a danger to the true faith? The more I reflect on it, study what the Catholic Church teaches, and pray about it,
the more plain, obvious, and clear is the fact that such a thing is impossible. Therefore, if you state that attending a Mass offered by John Paul II is a danger to your faith, please correspond with enough grace of God to know without a doubt that John Paul II is not a true, valid vicar of Jesus Christ. I spoke with Bishop George Musey, some priests from CMRI, and other traditionalists. They told me that they did not believe the Novus Ordo Church was the true church. If the Novus Ordo Church is not the true church, it is a false church. Have people come from the Novus Ordo Church to Bishop George Musey, to the CMRI, priests, or other traditionalist churches and received the sacraments? Yes, they have. Did these bishops and priests require these Novus Ordo converts, if that's what they call them, to first take the abjuration of error and the profession of faith? No, they did not. Some of these Novus Ordo people were born and raised in that church. When they came to the traditionalist bishop or priest, they do not make an abjuration of error or profession of faith. When I asked the bishop and priest why these Novus Ordo non-Catholics did not need to take the abjuration of error, the answer I received was, because they are still Catholics. My dear friends, is it not as obvious as day and night, black and white, that a non-Catholic church with a totally new religion cannot be at the same time the true church? If a man has been a member of the Lutheran Church for 25 years, is he still a Catholic? When Martin Luther left the true church, how many years did the people that followed him remain Catholics? If a man comes to the priests of CMRI or any other traditionalist priest or bishop, it seems, that has been a member of the Lutheran Church for just 5 years, does he need to take the abjuration of error before he goes to confession and communion? Maybe some of them would require it since he's a Lutheran. Then why don't they require it from the Novus Ordo? Who is more non-Catholic, a Novus Ordo or a Lutheran? Does the Lutheran Church have the four marks of the true church? Maybe John Paul II thinks it does because he called the Lutheran Church the sister church of the Catholic Church. Does John Paul II's Novus Ordo Church have the four marks of the true church? Seems like the traditionalist movement priests and bishops say it does because they do not require the Novus Ordo people to take the abjuration of error and the profession of faith before giving them other sacraments. Although surprised, I can understand how it is possible that Pam did not stop to think about the facts that the milk and eggs were bought to the store from the farm. And because it was just a story I made up to try and enlighten you by what followed, I can understand how two thrifty, dandy city dudes could not tell an old white mare from a younger black stallion. But I admit that I do not understand how a schismatic church can be the true church, nor how a true pope can be a member as well as the head of a schismatical, heretical, apostate church. Nor do I understand how for a long time members of a non-Catholic church are at the same time members of the true church. I do not understand how Lutherans, Mormons, and other Protestants are any more non-Catholic than Novus Ordo Protestants. I do not understand how any of those different religions have the four marks of the true church. Nor do I understand how the Catholic Church can remain until the end of time without any bishop in the world having an office, authority, and jurisdiction. But just because there has to be some bishop with an office, authority, and jurisdiction, that in no way implies that these pre-vat tradcat bishops and priests carry on the fourth mark of the church or any of the marks of the church. When you heard this story about Stanley Skyscraper and Olive Rappus Man, did you notice that the older,
white mare was on the right side and the younger black stallion on the left. As the story went on, the older white mare represented the true church and the black stallion all false religions and churches. The true church has always been and is now and always will be on the right side, that is, on God's side. And furthermore, the mare was white, the stallion black. The true church is white, that is, immaculate, the spouse of God, without spot or wrinkle. Those who are not in the true church, when they die, will be cast forever into the external darkness.
My dear friends in Christ, I don't think any sane man, woman, or child wants to be cast into the eternal exterior darkness. Before I spoke about Pam, the city gal, and the two city dudes, I was speaking of Johnny Slipalong. Johnny Slipalong left us by quickly slipping out of the hospital to go get some cayenne pepper when he realized that he needed the prescription prescribed by Dr. Slaughterall about as bad as a snail needs air brakes. And before speaking about Johnny Slipalong, I told the story about the snail carrying the drop of water to remind us of some things concerning eternity. Snails go so slow they certainly do not need air brakes, and certainly we do not need to be cast out into the external darkness. But I, for one, simply cannot understand how all those who belong to the Novus Ordo New Religion, or that which is called the Pre-Vat Tradcat Religion, the Pre-Vatican II Traditionalist Catholic Religions, whether they be St. Pius X Group, St. Pius V Group, the CMRI Group, the one-on-one freelance priest, the Fraternity of St. Peter, and the many others, all of those people believing they have the four marks of the true church, with such contradictory theology and philosophy and doctrines and dogmas that they accept or don't accept. They're certainly divided on things that pertain to matters of faith, such as papal infallibility, whether this man is a pope or he's not the pope. Some of them have to be non-Catholics. So let us review again something from the book titled Priest Problems, pages 397, 398, and 399. Where this author speaks about reception of sacraments from a non-Catholic minister. Can there be a good cause, apart from danger of death, justifying reception of the sacraments from the ministry of a non-Catholic sect who is known to be validly ordained and capable of ministering certain sacraments validly? Part 1. Relying on Canon 2261 alone, one might unthinkingly give an affirmative reply to the question submitted. For the non-Catholic minister is not normally in the condition of an excommunicated person in Section 3 of the Canon, and it would therefore seem that any grave cause justifies receiving sacraments from his ministration. When, however, it is remembered that an excommunicated person as such does not normally cease to be a Catholic, it is evident that the content of Canon 2261 relates chiefly to Catholics who may be excommunicated for a variety of reasons. This next sentence is important. Please pay attention. The question of receiving sacraments from non-Catholics, whether excommunicated or not, is ruled by Canon 1258. And I insert here what Canon 1258 Part 1 reads. It is unlawful for the faithful in any way actively to be present at or take part in the religious services of non-Catholics. So I'm commenting. Some of those ministers in the pre-Vat Tradcat religions have to be non-Catholic. And this Canon 1258 strictly says, it is unlawful for the faithful in any way actively to be present at or take part in the religious services of non-Catholics. Now, this is a very, very serious business. Let us pick up with it again on the next tape. And this series of tapes titled, Who is Right and Who is Wrong?